Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
So we're watching something right now in real time. Air Force One has landed at LA. I guess it's LAX. Maybe it's a different airport, but it's in Los Angeles right now. And Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, is waiting for the president at the bottom of the steps. And the question now is, how long will Trump make him wait? Because he hasn't stepped out of the airplane. But he was in, and I think this was a great, great move and the right one. They went to North Carolina first, and they talked to Hurricane Helene survivors and talked about their challenges. Now the president's going to meet with Gavin Newsom, talk about the California wildfires, which are still burning. That got some rain on the way this weekend, which could be a good thing, could be a bad thing. And, hey, we'll have to see where the, you know, the meeting takes us, but I was watching Gavin Newsom last night, and I'm not going to say he was bending the knee, but he was being very careful about what he said. There's no doubt about that. We'll talk some music a little later this hour with our friend Tim Sommer. We love Tim, and he wrote, this is a true story, he wrote this piece in the New York Times that I had seen, and I put it in my reading list on my iPad, and I didn't even know it was him that wrote it. And then he sent me a message that said, hey, check this out. I'm like, dude, I've already checked it out, but I didn't know you wrote it.
So that's awesome.
But it's about aging roadies, and it's really, really interesting. So that's coming up here in just a little bit. But we have to talk football also. And Sue, I don't know if I want you to be involved in this. Ethan, you know what I'm talking about.
She has been Bills.
Yeah, I don't really get it. Yeah. We'll talk about that, but we're going to talk as we head into the weekend here. I like Josh Allen as well. But Alex Gold is with us from Kansas City, 610 Sports Radio in KC. Alex, how are you? Happy Friday. Are you ready for this weekend?
What's going on, guys? Good to be back on. Yeah, I'm ready. You know, last week, it's hard to take divisional rounds seriously in Kansas City. That's how spoiled everybody has become. It's really all about these AFC title games and Super Bowls at this point.
So, handicap this one for us. We look, the Chiefs have not been an offensive powerhouse, but they seem to get it done. People are making, you know, note of the fact that, look, Josh Allen's probably had a far better year than Patrick Mahomes. They have a bit of an injury at safety, starting a rookie safety. How do you see the matchup?
So I'm with you on the quarterbacks that I think both are going to play at a very high level. But you know what? The quarterbacks in these matchups in the playoffs have both played a high level for the prior three, in which Mahomes won all three. We went through the numbers today on our show a little bit with Josh Allen compared to Patrick Mahomes. And very, very similar in terms of the numbers. In fact, Patrick Mahomes has actually put up slightly better numbers than Josh Allen. Ooh. So I think it's going to be equaled by QB play, but ultimately it's going to come down to which defense is able to come up with that stop. And Kansas City did not have Charles Omenihu, one of their pass rushers, available back in week 11 when Buffalo won. They did not have Jalen Watson, who's going to be their number two corner in this game back in week 11. So I think Kansas City moves the ball, and they're going to be able to come up with that stop that they weren't able to come up with back in week 11.
Well, let's hope so. I'm hoping, but let's address the issue of where people might be rooting in the state of Missouri. Jason Rosenbaum, who works for the government subsidized station here in St. Louis, and he's a really good political reporter, but I don't like his take on sports. He tweeted this the other day, and I rejected it, Alex. So he said, I hate to say it, Missouri, but probably everyone besides folks who live west of Boone County are going to root for the Bills next week. And I think that that's absolutely not true, because there's plenty of Chiefs fans here in the St. Louis area and certainly around the state. But there seems to be some Chiefs hatred that is built up here because of all the success, Alex.
No doubt. No doubt. You go outside of Kansas City, and I guess maybe outside of the St. Louis area as well, it's all about Buffalo Bills love at this point and hope. It's more about the Chiefs hate, and it goes back to ultimately just winning, right? People can claim you know, the officiating is rigged towards Kansas City and things like that. But we saw this play out in sports history before, whether it was the Patriots, whether it was, you know, the Miami Heat and Golden State Warriors in the NBA. I mean, we can go on and on and on. This is what happens when you win a lot. People get sick of you, and they can't fathom why a team is so dominant, so they have to come up with certain reasons why a team is able to win. And that's what we're seeing happen this week. We've kind of said embrace the hate is our kind of the mantra, or Chiefs derangement syndrome, as we call it, that has really caught on
like
across
that.
The country.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, for me, I take a lot of heat because I'm a Packers fan, and I'm a big Chiefs fan. And it was because I started going to Kansas City when I was in Columbia. I went to Mizzou. I started going to the games. There was no football team here. The Cardinals had left. I was never, ever, and I kept this quiet for a long time, forever. I was never a Rams fan. In fact, I hated the Rams when they were here. I really did. And I kept my mouth shut about it because I was a Chiefs and a Packers fan. But there are a lot of people in the state that glommed onto the Chiefs during that period, like me, when there was no professional football outside of Kansas City and Missouri.
Oh, no question. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about the track record of this franchise right now and where the fan base has grown, certainly during this latest run, but it was not that long ago. I would try to remind people outside of this area that, you know, this is not how it always was. I mean, I don't have to tell you even about
all
the
right.
90s.
Yeah,
where 80s and 90s, where they really struggled to fill the stadium, you know, and it was a problem. You know, Carl Peterson came in as the Chiefs general manager at the time, and he kind of turned everything around with Marty Schottenheimer. But then there was some lulls in 2011, 2012, when there were banners flying around the stadium for wanting Scott Pioli, the general manager at the time, fired. And then now they're at the top. So this is the prime golden era of sports in Kansas City, and certainly this is as good as it'll ever get for the Chiefs, frankly. I mean, I don't know if they end up winning another three rings or this is it. Whatever it is, this is as good as everybody's going to see in their lifetime.
Alex Gold is here with Kansas City 610 Sports Radio. There was a lot of criticism earlier in the year about Travis Kelce. He wasn't getting a lot of touches. He seemingly has had a lot of momentum working into these playoffs, hasn't he?
It's happened the last 2 years. The key is rest and being fresh at his age. Last year in Week 18, he did not play against the Chargers. This year, we all know he didn't play against the Broncos in Week 18 because Kansas City had everything wrapped up. And he's spoken about that at his age, you know, he the time off from an early bye week in Week 6 this year, he needed it. And that's why he had the game that he had against Houston. I also think the Texans, for whatever reason, decided not to really focus on him, and he was wide open throughout the game. I don't think that'll be the case against Buffalo. I think he'll still get his yardage, but he's going to have to work a heck of a lot harder. But this is a guy that turns it on in the playoffs, and he looked like a Hall of Fame tight end. Last week, he looked like a Hall of Fame tight end during the postseason run a year ago. He has 14 straight games, Mark, with over 70 yards receiving in the playoffs. That's the longest streak in NFL history.
Hey, Alex, Ethan Hannaford here. So I'm curious of what the overall thought is to where Patrick Mahomes is right now. It's back-to-back years now where the regular season offensive numbers weren't what they were the couple of years before that. Not that he has been bad, nowhere near that, but it hasn't been quite that same level. And to be quite frank, you know, people haven't been talking about him on the level of Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson for some of these season award titles. But the last couple of years, he has figured out a way to get hot at the right time, get things done when it comes playoff time. So back to that original statement, where do not only Kansas City fans, but really just Kansas City media see Patrick Mahomes right now as far as just compared to other quarterbacks in the NFL?
Well, statistically, there's no question. He's not at the level this year as Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. And to your point, it's why he wasn't really ever in the MVP conversation. So that is very true. I think a couple things have happened. One, the national narrative around the Chiefs. We just got done talking about the kind of dislike for them. I think his job at winning an MVP award or having the national narrative is going to be tougher and tougher. It's why Andy Reid should win Coach of the Year, but he doesn't because he's expected to be great. Bill Belichick only won a couple Coach of the Years, even though he was obviously the best coach for 10-plus years or whatever in the league. So there's some of that. And then I also believe the offensive line play. You know, the offensive line play this year has been really problematic. It's forced him to be uncomfortable in the pocket, maybe a lack of trust. He kind of lost some of his footwork early on in the year. And then this back half of the season, he hasn't turned the ball over, and that's why I think now people have plenty of faith and confidence in where he's at. Since that Bills game in Week 11, he hasn't thrown an interception. And in these games, in these moments, nobody has been able to step up better than him over the last 5 to 7 years. Josh Allen's 0-for-3. We all know Joe Burrow and Tom Brady are the only two quarterbacks that have beat Mahomes in the postseason. And the earliest exit for Mahomes in the postseason is an overtime game in the AFC title game. So, a lot of the statistical stuff in the regular season, people around here kind of throw out because they know come playoff time, you're going to get the best Patrick Mahomes performance.
Well, I want to flip it to the defense here and my Mizzou connection because, man, Nick Bolton is having a year, and this defense has been really important in stepping up at the right times, and I think they can do it again this weekend.
This is a defensive team. I guess that goes with the question from before, too. I mean, this is more of a defensive team. That's not what we probably had said prior years, but it is definitely more of a defensive-led football team, even if you trust Patrick Mahomes to go make the play when you got to have it. But that's really where the last 2 years, they've leaned on the defense. Steve Spagnuolo is an underrated defensive coordinator still somehow in this league. I know he got a couple interviews this coaching cycle for a head coaching gig. I don't think he's going to get that, especially now that Pete Carroll filled the Raiders gig today.
Yeah.
But Nick Bolton is one of those anchors. Unfortunately, I do think there's a chance this is the last go for Nick Bolton in a Chiefs uniform just based off of positional value and where they got to allocate some of their money for some more premium positions. But he's crucial. He's going to be crucial in this game. I think this linebacking core against Josh Allen in particular, his running ability. Leo Chanel, the other linebacker, I think is where that comes in. But this defense is just better positioned than they were 6 weeks ago because of Charles Omenihu and Jalen Watson. You know, and why does that matter? Well, Chris Jones is going to get double teamed every single time, so you got to have somebody else that can win one on one. I think Charles Omenihu can do that, and then Jalen Watson is more of a physical corner than Trent McDuffie, who's an All Pro, and they didn't have Watson against the Bills the first go around. So now they've kind of got this whole group. They're as healthy as a playoff team could ever be. I went back and looked. I think it's 19 of 22. Players that started week one are available for this game, and the only reason why it's not more, one of them is a left tackle in Kingsley Suamataia, who they don't, you know, who they don't want to start, and they upgraded actually with Joe Tooney. The other one is Rashee Rice, who we know has been out. Other than that, they basically have the exact same unit that started the season. That just doesn't happen. So they're as fresh as you could possibly be, which I think bodes very well for them Sunday night.
And how does that compare to the, you know, I mentioned the safety for the Bills, but the offensive line for the Bills, or even the defensive line, are they dinged up, or are they coming in pretty healthy overall?
So Deion Dawkins, their offensive lineman in Buffalo, was a little banged up, but it looks like he's going to be good to go. That is a huge strength for Buffalo if we're going through and say, hey, where do they have the edge? I mean, the Buffalo Bills offensive line is one of the best units in football. It's definitely an upgrade from what the Chiefs just faced against the Houston Texans. But on the defensive side, it's a different story. You know, you mentioned Rapp, the safety is going to be out. Bernard, one of their top corners, is still in concussion protocol. Although I think by Sunday, my guess would be he's going to play. And then Matt Milano, one of their best linebackers, or the best linebacker, who's going to be matched up with Travis Kelce. He's dealing with a hamstring soreness, I believe is what they're officially calling it there. So there's no question they've got some more injuries to deal with. And it's also not the same defense, I think, in some of these other Chiefs-Bills matchups. This is the fourth playoff go, and this is the worst defense the Bills have brought to the party. And that's a big reason why I think, despite all the talk about Josh Allen, and he has been terrific, you know, he's been terrific in the other three matchups. I don't think it's so much that. It's got to be somebody else that beats them, whether it's a James Cook, the running back for Buffalo, or that the Chiefs offensively flat out just don't have something going and they make mistakes. The Chiefs had two turnovers in the first matchup, and that's something that if they do that again, they'll be losing to Buffalo for the first time in the playoffs.
Alex, I got to take you to the other game because, look, we had four phenomenal NFL playoff games last week, and I have been loving Jaden Daniels before the season even started. Drafted him in my fantasy football league. He ended up being my starter, bringing me to a championship. But he's so much fun to watch. And this Commanders team is for real. You got Jalen Hurts a little banged up with a knee, maybe wearing a brace. The Commanders have a shot here, don't they?
They absolutely have a shot. I mean, how can you count them out at this point after winning on the road at Detroit against what most people considered was the best team all year? And this Philadelphia team, what, 3 weeks ago, I think it was? 4 weeks ago at this point? Went to Philadelphia and got a win on the final play from scrimmage. So they just beat this Eagles team. And I think the point about Jalen Hurts is the key here. I don't think he looks right. And he's been dealing with some concussion stuff. He has not been all that effective. Ultimately, I do think Saquon Barkley is going to have a huge day against the Commanders, though, and this is a Washington defense that's not good, and I know they beat a Lions team that's got a great offense, but Goff had four turnovers. I don't think Jalen Hurts will even have the opportunity to have four turnovers in this game because of the running attack from Barkley. So ultimately, I think Washington loses, but it would not surprise me one bit if this thing is close. Jaden Daniels has proven he's going to be one of those special quarterbacks that just kind of has it, that, you know, has put together the best rookie season we've ever seen because of two road playoff wins. So the Commanders, I don't think they get blown out, but I don't think they have an answer for Barkley, and frankly, who does?
Well, nobody does. I mean, he doesn't just get like 3-4 yards. He's like, oh, there's another 60-yard, 68-yard touchdown. It was awesome. Did you see like when he ran for that, busted out for that big one last week, right when he basically got around the first turn, Jalen had his hands up and was like, touchdown. He knew it right away.
Absolutely. You said it. He can be bottled down for a quarter, and all of a sudden you're like, man, he only has like 30 or 40 yards rushing. And then 160-plus yard run, he pops off, and next thing you know, he's over 100. That's why he had over 2,000 yards rushing this year.
Alex, thank you so much. Fun talking NFL football. We'll see what happens this weekend. Let's go, Chiefs!
Absolutely. Right. Go Chiefs. Thanks, guys.
We'll see you.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I always like finding new music quite a bit that I'm not familiar with. And my BFF, John Mayer, turned me onto this one. Shadows crawl. It's a band called Bird Talker. I just like the name of the band. The song is called Season of Charade. I listened to, I don't know John, I wish I did, I really have a man crush, but I listened to his SiriusXM station, Life with John Mayer, and he played this one, I think, last Saturday. So I put that into my queue on my music service, which was Tidal. And I like it quite a bit. Bird Talker is the name of the band. So, Sue, true story, a couple weeks ago, you know, I subscribed to every damn publication on the planet. The LA Times, the Washington Post, a lot of them, because I've always met the paywall when I'm doing show prep. So I do subscribe to the New York Times. And a couple weeks ago, I saw this story with the headline, These Roadies Help Stars Rock and Roll All Night. They're in their 70s. And I was doing regular prep, not necessarily stuff for lighter, but I'm like, I want to read that. That seems like an interesting piece. So I have this, if you have Apple products, and I'm sure you have something on your communist phone as well, where you can put it into a reading list. So I have a reading list, and then I was going to go back. So then I get a message from our friend Tim Summer, and he sends me a copy of that story, and I realize, oh, wait a second. He's the guy who wrote the story,
oh my gosh.
This is a true story, Tim Summer. I did not know you wrote it until you shared it to me. I had every intention of reading it, and I did read it after you shared that with me. How are you, and Happy New Year.
Oh, Happy New Year to you. And I'm going to go very slightly off subject for about 18 seconds here, because I have to ask you guys a question that's going to blow your mind.
Okay.
For all I know, you've already discussed this on the show sometime in the past. How come the Cleveland Indians had to change their name, but the Kansas City Chiefs didn't?
Well, I think the answer to that is because ownership said, we're never going to do that.
Yeah.
And Chiefs Kingdom said, nope. I think it just had to be an issue of political correctness that just wasn't going to fly in Kansas City. I mean, they've slowed down with the tomahawk chop, I think, but I just don't think it was ever going to happen. And there was just too much resistance.
It's a solid question.
Yeah. But let's talk music. How about that?
Absolutely.
And I want to talk about a little bit more than your piece, but this is interesting to me as someone who has followed, and I think, Tim, you know that I've kind of joked about not seeing any more rock stars in their 70s. And I'm kind of half joking about that, but I've seen a lot of these acts before. But one thing I know, even about Mr. Springsteen, is he's got a guy by the name of Kevin Buell, who is his guitar tech, and Kevin's been with him for decades. And as your story in the New York Times indicated, a lot of these artists have had loyal people that are now in their own 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah, well, the initiation, and the reason I did this article was I worked in the music business in the 1990s, of course, yeah, and before in the 1980s as well. And as I get older, I found that the music industry, and of course there are many music industries, there's not just one music industry, but the music industries can be a very ageist place. Like, for instance, you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone working in a record company who is, say, over 30 years old. Of course, that's an exaggeration,
right,
but that's the basic idea. It's a young person's game. However, I began to realize that I had all these friends who were roadies, who were techs, who were doing front of house. Front of house is a soundboard that's in the middle of the stadium, mm-hmm, way back there with all the buttons and knobs where they control the sound. All these people, and there were friends of mine, who were in their 60s and 70s, and they kept on working. Specifically, I have this friend named Ace, and he did a front of house for Sammy Hagar. He does Dream Theater. He's always working. Ace has more work than he could possibly ever do. And Ace is my age, and he keeps on working and working and working. And I thought, wow, I bet there are a lot of people like this, and it turns out there were. There were these guys in their 70s. There are guys approaching in their 80s who are still out there working.
Dang.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Sorry,
like,
about
you
that.
Have quotes like Betty Cantor Jackson, 76, first worked a soundboard for the Grateful Dead in 1968. She's still doing gigs in the Bay Area.
Wow.
Frank Gallagher, 77. He's in Vegas doing the B-52's residency. So a lot of these, and for the artists, this is about trust and loyalty, right?
Absolutely, because let's take one of the people I interviewed was this guy, Kevin Dugan, who's a legend in the music industry. He is the bass tech for Michael Anthony, and he's been the bass tech for Michael Anthony since Van Halen was playing clubs. And the fact is, if you have a guy who you've trusted to sit behind your amp and tune your instrument and prepare your instrument and prepare your amplifier, and they've been doing it and doing it right year after year after year, why would you change horses? You wouldn't. Plus, these people become a member of your family. These people become an extension of your arm. They become an extension of the instrument themselves. One of the guys I wrote about, who is the Edge's guitar tech, okay, Dallas Hsu. That's his name, Dallas Hsu. Dallas literally sits curled up beneath the stage, triggering the Edge's effects. He's indispensable to the guy, and Dallas is 70 years old. So once these people, you know, the first thing to say is once these people, you trust them, why would you ever change? Secondly, it is utterly wonderful that older people are still being appreciated and employed by the music industry. Now, number three, it says something very, very nice about the unions. All of these guys, every person I talk to, with one small exception, every person I talk to is a member of the union, and they all speak very, very highly about it. And you have these guys, I'll take my friend Frank Gallagher as an example. He does high-end work for the B-52s. He just came off a long residency with the B-52s in Las Vegas. As soon as he gets home, he calls his union and says, "Do you need me for anything?" And they said, "Yeah, we need someone to run a microphone at a convention today." "Yeah, I can do that." And it's wonderful that the unions are still powerful in that business. And it's a very, very nice story. I thought it was sort of a very feel-good story, just that older people are still being appreciated in the business. And I'm going to give you an example. It's a little bit selfish. I had a very, very good run as an A&R person. An A&R person is the person who finds the talent for a label and brings them in and develops that talent.
Yeah, by the way, it was my dream job when I was like 16 years old,
sure,
and I ended up in radio. It really was, because I think I told you this, but I you know, that's what I wanted to do. I really did, and you got to do it. So anyway, go ahead. I cut you off.
You get to do it. And you know, and this is not a poor me story by any means, but it's worth saying. I had an extremely successful run at Atlantic Records in the 1990s. I helped make one of the most successful albums of all time. Now, I left that label in 1999. I'm now in my 60s. If I tried to find a job at a major label, I don't think I could even get a job as somebody's assistant. I don't think I could get a job opening mail. And that's not because someone doesn't like me. That's not because I ever made any enemies. It's just because no one would hire an A&R guy in their 60s, or for that matter, their 50s, or for that matter, their 40s.
Or 30s.
It was a joy.
Yeah.
It was a joy to write this story for the New York Times, in which I was able to say, here is a feel-good story about people in their 60s and 70s in the music industry, still being appreciated and still working, 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 with no end in sight.
My sense is also, and I offered Kevin's name as an example, for those of us who really, really follow these bands, whether it's U2 or Van Halen or Springsteen, the super fans, they know these people too, because the bands and the artists have made them special. So that's kind of fun as well. Let's talk about some other stuff though, while we have you here. And I know you wrote about Michael Stipe recently, because you have some REM connections also, don't you? But he turned 65 this week.
Well, I was one of those people who became friends with the band very, very early on, before they even put out an album. And we stayed close friends. And Michael Stipe turned 65 about 2 weeks ago, two and a half weeks ago. And I think, I don't know so much, there are a lot of people who Michael Stipe was an important and powerful figure to them, and a figure in sort of encouraging them to be themselves. For instance, I personally believe that there wouldn't be any Kurt Cobain without Michael Stipe, meaning Michael Stipe came of age in a music industry where people acted a little weird, but you know what? They didn't really speak to the lonely person in their room. To me, the best thing music can do is be a friend to the friendless. And who is more friendless than a 15, 16-year-old boy or girl sitting in their room? So that, to me, is Michael Stipe and REM built this enormous constituency in America out of people who felt, when they looked around their high school hallways, I'm a little different. I'm a little lonely. I feel a little alien to the other people here. REM collected all of those people in a constituency in the 1980s, and then that constituency went on to form bands, to write books, to form internet companies, whatever you want to say. So I thought, he's a figure who has been underappreciated, not just as a musician, but in terms of his role in culture. And I know that sounds very silly, but if you read the article, which I think you did.
I did, yeah.
That I wrote for the Rock and Roll Globe on Michael Stipe's birthday, I think you'd see what I was trying to say. I don't know if any of that made sense.
No, it made a lot of sense. But let me ask this. This is one of my, because I was a big REM fan, I never saw them live. And, there was a period where, and we still joke about these bands who have done endless reunion tours. It's the last tour. We're going to do one more tour, Elton John, whoever. But REM breaks up and they don't ever come back out and do a tour.
There's a small list of bands who will never reunite to do that tour, no matter how big the money is.
Are they one of them?
REM is on that list. And what's funny is, unlike all the other bands on that list, they're still all really good friends. They're still very close.
But why not then? What's the reason? He just wanted to have a definitive end? Because you can't tell me that if REM got back together and wanted to do a residency or a big tour, they would sell out instantly.
I think they thought that their creative story was over, that they said everything they had to say, and it was time to move on. Frankly, maybe, they were a band, like so many bands, and Springsteen is a beautiful example of this, they were a band that existed as a brotherhood with their fans, right? So maybe they don't want to come out and do a tour where the tickets would be $500, $700, yeah, $1,000. They don't want to do that because they want to respect that bond they had with fans in the 1980s and the 1990s. That's just a guess, but I think it's a good guess. And the funny thing is, they have kind of reunited. I mean, they played one song last year at a Songwriters Hall of Fame event. They all got together and played one song together. And they still talk all the time. Plus, You'll see that two of the band's members, the guitar player Peter Buck and the bassist Mike Mills, they play all the time. They tour in different bands. Buck and Mills tour in a wonderful band called the Baseball Project. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
I have heard of them, but I don't know much about. I always heard that, you know, I go down occasionally to Todos Santos, Mexico, and there was always a rumor that, I can't remember, it was Mills or somebody else lived down there. I don't know if you know that. And the other thing, by the way, Michael Stipe spent some time in St. Louis. He formed a band here in St. Louis.
He's from St. Louis.
I don't think he's from here originally, but he spent some time in high school here.
Yes,
so,
he did.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's from there originally, actually, but when I met Michael, he told me that although he had moved, his family had moved. He's a military kid. I don't know if you knew that.
He grew up in West Germany, I think, before he was even here.
And he spent some very formative years in St. Louis. I think he told me, despite the fact that he felt very strongly about his identity as a Southerner, as a resident of Athens, Georgia, and I'll tell you something very funny about that in a second, he told me that he felt that he sort of identified as being somebody from St. Louis.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, as I'm Google searching right here and trying to recall some of this, here's a story that was on our, this is from 2015 on our Fox 2 site. Listen to this. Here's a nugget. R.E.M. frontman Michael Stipe made an appearance on the late 1970s St. Louis broadcast of Newsbeat. This was Dick Ford and John Auble, two legendary anchors here in St. Louis. The Rocky Horror Picture Show was controversial. It says many fans flocked to full costumes. So apparently he's at one of the Rocky Horror Picture Shows, and there's a reporter in 1980 that's interviewing him.
There's a YouTube clip of it, yes.
Oh, there is? I got to check that out. Yeah, that's hilarious.
A fantastic YouTube clip of it. And I'll tell you something very, very quickly. I'll tell you something funny about Michael Stipe. When I first became friends with him and I visited, I was in Athens, Georgia. This is around 1985 or so, visiting him. And I asked him, how is Athens as a place to live? And he said, Athens is fantastic as long as you stay off of the streets on a college football Saturday, which I'm sure that's true of a lot of towns.
So I wanted to talk one more 65th birthday here, because I acknowledged this earlier this week that Michael Hutchence would have turned 65 from In Excess. So that led me to pull some music and to watch some videos that I hadn't seen in a long time. And I mean, you start thinking about the power that that band could have had for the last,
absolutely,
you know, 30
well
years
played.
If he was still around, because they were incredible. And it just ended in a very sad way for people. I don't know. I mean, he did. Sue and I were talking about this. It was ruled a suicide, I think, right? Because there was some sexual asphyxiation type thing.
But you know what? Who knows what the truth is?
Right, exactly. But what a loss.
I've heard otherwise. But the fact is, he was a wonderful, compelling front man.
Yeah.
Very sweet and charming human being. I was fortunate enough to meet him a few times. Couldn't have been nicer. And they were a band, and it's interesting, when you compare them to R.E.M., I feel that In Excess were a band who may have been intimidated by MTV and commercial radio into doing music that was a little more commercial, a little more to the right of where their souls were. Whereas R.E.M. sort of always stayed in their lane, and I mean that in a very positive way. They certainly expanded their music. They certainly changed their music a lot. But R.E.M. never did anything in their career just to get on the radio or anything like that. I'm not sure the same is true of In Excess, but having said that, In Excess, you're right. I think they could have gone on to be the kind of band that you would be seeing in stadiums now.
Yeah, I think so,
yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
Hey, one of the things, and I don't know how much recon you had a chance to do, but we were texting earlier today, and one of the topics I was going to bring up is just, you know, tours for this year. Because from my, now look, I'm old, and I've been looking at some of the music festivals, and I'm seeing artists out there that I don't know. Some of them I do know. But I don't feel like there's big tours. AC/DC would be one that some aging rock guy like me would be interested in. Tim, am I wrong about that? There's big country tours.
Well,
there's AC/DC. What else is out there for this summer?
You know, I was looking at that list, too, and Billy Joel's playing a couple of dates here and there.
He was just here, though. He just came here one more time to Busch Stadium.
Coldplay's playing a couple of dates. And by a couple, I mean they're really just playing three or four dates in the United States. Metallica's playing a bunch of dates. Fisher back on tour. Rod Stewart's doing a big tour. Some of those dates with Billy Joel. But that leads to a question I have for you guys. Why does everyone always bypass St. Louis?
You know, this is an excellent question, yeah. And this would probably be a question that we should address in a different show, maybe with other participation with you, me, and someone else that would have some level of expertise on this, because it's a very good question. By the way, it's not only big acts that tend to pass us by. There's a lot of smaller acts that, you know, club acts go to Kansas City, and they'll go to Chicago, and they may even go to Springfield, Missouri, and they won't come here.
I mean, you have some interesting shows coming up, like you have Daryl Hall coming to a Steeple Theater, and you seem to have some fairly decent acts at a club called The Pageant.
The Pageant's a great club. We have another club out in the West St. Louis suburbs called The Factory. They've been stealing a lot of those shows maybe that The Pageant would get, but that does book in a lot of the, a lot of the smaller alternative rock acts.
And of course, the band that needs that really so underexposed that I'm really glad they have a chance to play in your area. I noticed that Post Malone.
There's hardly any Post Malone.
Stadium.
Right. Yeah, that's going to be a big show.
Good for them, because you do not hear enough about Post Malone. You just don't.
Yeah, we mentioned that earlier. You know, I'm thinking about this. The only tickets I think I have, this is rare, Sue. You know I go to a lot of shows.
Yes.
I think the only tickets I have are for the Toto tour, and we decided to go see them in Las Vegas in August. They're coming here to St. Louis, but I don't even have tickets for anything right now, which is kind of weird.
If I was going to tell you to drive, I don't know. Is Kansas City too far for you to drive?
No, it's 4 hours. It's nothing. Billy Idol's going on a tour, and you know Billy Idol pretty well, too.
Yes,
he's
I do,
not. He's skipping
he's
here.
He's going on a wonderful tour with Joan Jett.
And he's skipping St. Louis. Damn it, Timson. Can you have a conversation with him?
If you want to drive to Kansas City on March 31st, go see Kraftwerk.
Oh, that's kind of interesting to me for sure.
Yeah.
I've never seen Kraftwerk. We may have to talk about that one. But thank you, Tim Sommer. We always love your contributions.
Always a pleasure. And as I said to you in the text, I love Sue's News. I wish I can't get enough of it.
Well, check out the New York Times piece about roadies. Just Google Tim Sommer roadies, New York Times. Tim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
What a pleasure. And thank you so much. And great weekend to you guys, too.
Bird Talker, the name of this band. I like this song.
Wildness in the eye.
Oh, on the topic of good music.
Come home late in the morning light.
That is Marcus Mumford and Mumford & Sons, and they have gone back to their roots. They kind of got away from that just a little bit. This is the title track from a new album called Rushmere.
Now we're still a secret.
And that is the first album from Mumford & Sons in 7 years. And this is a band, so I don't know if you know Mumford & Sons, but they started off kind of alternative folk. I saw them at the Pageant. I saw them at a theater in Milwaukee. And then all of a sudden they blew up so big, they played Enterprise Center. And my thought was, wait a second, how can a band that's kind of rootsy and folksy and they have a banjo do an arena show? And they freaking killed it. And then we haven't seen them since.
Yeah,
Marcus. Well, you know, they did some other stuff. They had a Winston Marshall, one of the band members. He quit the band because he wanted his freedom of speech, and he was kind of out there on our side of politics. And he said, okay, I'm just going to do this, and I'm out of the band. But Marcus Mumford did some solo stuff, but they got back together for this album, and I'm very excited. And that track is excellent. We'll kind of go out with it here after Audio Cut of the Day. And speaking of that...
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the Audio Cut of the Day.
Sue, we've always tried to keep people up to date, really, on a lot of these issues. There's been so many executive orders this week, and I wanted to throw a few more in here in case you've missed these.
Sir, this is a proclamation making the new national bird the fried chicken. Sir, this is a permit to build a Hooters directly in front of the Vietnam War Memorial.
That's a big one.
It's a little sharp up there.
People have wanted to do this for years. What's this, sir?
Sir, this is an arrest warrant for 3 of the 4 women who host The View.
Okay.
I'd sign that
Sounds
one,
reasonable.
Right?
Oh, could you please make your signature huge and crazy? Great. Sir, this is a map of the L.A. wildfires. We were hoping you could doodle on it with your Sharpie and make the fires go away. Mm-hmm. Really good job.
People have too much fun out there with AI. Sometimes you don't know what's
that
real and what's fake.
That is funny. You really don't.
Yeah, that one's fake, just to be clear. Just in case people were wondering. Sue, have a great weekend.
You too, Mark.
I'm going to try to bring the grandbaby in next week. My son just arrived with his girlfriend Natalie and Idris, my grandbaby, so I'm going to have a good weekend with them, my other son from Chicago. And we'll leave you with the new track from Mumford & Sons. This is killer. It's called Rushmere. We'll talk Monday at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.